Dumbass news.
Here we go. It's time for dumbass news.
Okay, here we go.
It's time for Chaz and AJ dumbass news. Dumbass.
All right, comedian Emily Sierra in studio.
What up, what up?
Morning.
You want to hear the sound of a guy being attacked by a squirrel?
Always.
Yes.
Okay. Always.
This was submitted by Heather Antonelli.
Oh, Heather.
This gives you a little insight as to what she's watching on Instagram.
Gotcha.
Or enjoying. This is really, a guy comes out of his door, and the next thing you know, there's a squirrel on him. Here it is. Good morning.
That'll wake you up.
I got to wash my car.
I mean, that was a nice header he took. He jumped forward, landed on the lawn.
It's complete flailing.
Oh, my God. It's everything.
Running, yep. Stumbling, falling.
Right. And that squirrel hung out for a few moments there.
That squirrel was on him.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. It was almost like when they ride the bucking broncos. The horse, the squirrel run for like 5 seconds.
That's what the squirrel was doing.
Right.
It's like, can I hold on for 7 seconds?
Riding volcano.
Can you play that again?
I like what you see. I swear the squirrel was smiling when it ran away. I'm like, that squirrel's smiling. Look what I did.
Yeah. He hits like a spin move on him,
yeah.
And then the squirrel goes flying.
Right.
It's like, yeah. Two backflips.
Twirls.
Yeah.
That sounds like he just lit himself on fire.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny because there's a bush next to the door, and
yeah.
The squirrel must have been hiding there.
Right.
Sneak attack.
Right.
Yeah, he must have thought the guy was a giant nut. How about the Yukon women?
How about them?
Joe Zone, Channel 3 Sports on the phone now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That wasn't even close.
Well, for about 5 minutes, it was close. They were behind 8-2 at the 5-minute mark of the game, behind 8-2. Timeout. And then everything changed. The defense shut them down the rest of the way. And it was really, it's hard to believe they scored 91 points when we're talking about UConn's defense. But really, that's when the game changed, when they really started to settle down and break down anything that, you know, they were trying to do. And here we are on our way to the next Sweet 16, 31 in a row.
91-57.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, you know, what are you doing the last couple of minutes of the game there? You're texting your wife, hey, you're going to be on the plane.
Right.
You know, you're not even, like, are you even watching at that point?
Yeah.
Well, at that point, what I'm actually doing is I'm kind of watching the crowd because normally, you know, that's a late game. 8 o'clock is late, so everybody's getting out of there late. And the crowd, after the subs come in, which he brought in late third quarter, the crowd starts to leave, but they did not leave last night at all, nobody, because they all wanted to be there for Paige's last second on the court and then her goodbye to the fans, you know, at Gamble. I mean, this, you know, she started in the COVID year. People forget, you know, she played their first season with nobody in arenas when college basketball was shut down. She was player of the year.
Wow.
So it has been a long, long journey for her. So that was just nice to be there. She took the microphone. I talked to her later in the locker room. She says, well, it's the last game here, but, you know, we're still thinking about next game, next game, next game. So that's the path they're on right now, which changed, by the way, I think, quite a bit when USC lost their best player last night and went down with an ACL.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, Juju Watkins, who probably will be the player of the year. Her and Paige, I think, would split the votes. Juju would. In the first quarter of that game last night, she went down hard, tore her ACL. She's out for the rest of the tournament.
Ah, bummer.
So, ouch.
It's terrible. And now, this is assuming that UConn beats Oklahoma, who they will play on Saturday at 5 o'clock.
How do you feel about that one?
Well, I'll tell you how I feel. It's pretty scary. So Oklahoma beat Iowa yesterday by like 15 points. Iowa beat USC this year. who USC lost to. And Iowa played UCLA, the number one seed in the tournament, to a two-point game. So Iowa's not a bad team. And Oklahoma just beat them last night pretty easily. And UConn has to play Oklahoma next round.
So you're saying this isn't a guaranteed?
I don't think anybody feels that it's a guarantee. I think once you get here, remember a few years ago, they lost to Ohio State in this round. So a lot of things can happen. This Oklahoma team, and I haven't seen a play of them yet, but I just know I've looked at what they've done, and I think you got to watch this one. Then if they win this game, then they would play USC, who we assume is going to win their Elite Eight, their Sweet 16 game.
All right. If you were to put your bracket together now,
yep.
I know you had St. John's going all the way, so that blew up your bracket. But if you were to put your bracket together now, who's in the final two for the men and the women?
Yeah, well, I had UConn. I mean, I had St. John's playing Duke anyway, so I still like Duke, and I like Florida now, who beat a real good UConn's team. So I think it would be Duke and Florida, and Duke, I still think, wins the whole thing. And I think you're looking at UConn and South Carolina for the women on the other side. That's what I think.
And UConn wins that?
Yes.
Nice.
And what will that make in terms of championships for UConn women?
12.
If they were to win 12.
Nice dozen.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Wow.
Wow. That's really quite remarkable.
We don't mind.
It's pretty impressive. You know, everybody kind of talks about some of the other teams this year, and UConn sitting back there in the weeds. Well, don't sit too far back.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's right. So when are you on a plane?
At this time tomorrow, I will be on a plane. We fly through Denver to Spokane. Media availability on Friday. Saturday is the first game. Sunday would be an in-between, and then next Monday, they would be playing for the right to go to the Final Four. So we want to get out there, get on the ground. I've never been to Spokane. All I know is this is the third straight year I've been, to the West Coast. NCAA keeps sending them out there. I think next year they're going to be playing in the Greenland Regional. go the way. So a lot of work to do, but this is always the best work, the most fun work.
Well, it's you're lucky to be working for Channel 3.
Yeah.
And Channel 3 has the rights for the UConn games.
Well, we have the media agreement, which gives us the right to use that Husky logo. And we love it. If you're going to be on something, the biggest thing in this state is UConn sports. You know, we're not in a professional sports town or market or even state. So this is our professional sports, and we treat it that way. And, that was sold out last night. That game was sold out. Every time you go to a UConn game, it's packed.
All right. Well, Joe, we will talk to you soon, and go UConn.
Yeah, safe travels.
All right, I'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
All right, Joe Zone, sports director of Channel 3. You know what revenge quitting is?
Revenge quitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anthony, you've heard of this?
Mm.
Millennials made it up,
yes.
For sure.
Yeah. Right. New thing.
Has anyone done it?
No.
This is when you wait. You don't give 2 weeks.
Right.
You wait until a big event is coming or it's right before their busy Friday night.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And hopefully you have a job lined up.
Right. And you just say, I'm not coming in.
That's it.
I don't even know if they have a job lined up.
They usually
no. I don't think it's that.
This one out.
I don't think it's that premeditated. I think it's just more of a vengeful, I'm going to stick it to you.
Right. Now's the time to do it.
Get you really good.
Yep.
Usually happens in sort of a hospitality retail type setting where you really, really stick it to your employer.
Right. Like a kitchen staff or something.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A Starbucks type place or like a restaurant type place. Yeah.
Yep. Anthony Avalon with Reitman Personnel on the show. Hold on. We got to play you this audio of a newscast of a guy who found a unique way to quit his job. You have that handy? Here it is.
After being told that he won the lottery jackpot, a Western Cape man peed all over the office floor of his boss of over 23 years and proceeded to take a dump on his boss's office desk before quitting his job on Friday morning. Now, when he went to go claim his winnings this morning, he found that he had never won anything.
Wow.
Oh, Oops.
Newscaster can't hold it together.
Oh my God. It's his desk.
Like, can I have my job back?
Right. I'll clean this up first.
Rick in Westport.
Yeah, I got a quit story and a question for your guest.
Okay.
Okay, so quit story, pretty funny. Not really a quit, but a great thing. I was part of a kitchen crew when I was young, you know, 19, 20, 23. The whole crew was that age. And it was a very successful restaurant. We were very well paid. The reason we were well paid is because the owner was this terrible alcoholic, okay? And we would get verbal abuse. We would get all kinds of crazy stuff. So we got paid well just to put up with it. So one summer Saturday afternoon, he comes in. He's been drinking, and he starts yelling at us that, you know, we're something small, and it escalated. And then he started throwing saute pans at us, oh. And the whole thing got nutty, right? So we decide we're going to stage a walkout. It's 4 o'clock. Kitchen opens at 6. Saturday, reservations are booked. So we all walked out and went to one of the other guys' apartments, and we hung out there and just waited for the phone to ring, right? So we sat there. So he calls us up. Hey, my sons, I'm sorry.
Daddy's sorry.
Please, you know.
Trump, Daddy.
Can't run a
so, you know, you can imagine, right? The whole kitchen crew walks out. So it worked, right? And then as your guest was saying earlier, being young and stupid, we kind of got inflated, and we started believing we were irreplaceable.
Oh, boy.
You know? And then it kind of went downhill from there. But I've seen that a million times in various places, businesses. Employees, especially if it's a smaller business, they start thinking they're irreplaceable, and then things start to get weird, right? You know? And my question for the guest is, I've been interviewed several times for, like, you know, regional sales jobs and things like that. And during the interview, they asked me, okay, we want you to write out your whole sales strategy. How would you execute it? Like almost like a whole business plan.
Then they take it.
The interview. Well, that's what I'm asking the guest is, should when people ask you stuff like that, you want to comply because they could say, well, we want to know if you know what you're doing, or are they just picking your brain for free? What's your take on that?
I don't think they're picking your brain for free. I think I will tell you this, that any of the clients that I advise to do something like that, what we're asking them to do it is to see if that you can actually put a plan like that together, right? Can you actually write a plan, and would you have the ability to sort of know how to execute something like that? We are less worried about the content that you actually put in that plan and more worried about, can you actually construct something from mind to paper, you know? And I think that would be, you know, for me, would be that is what I think they're looking for. If the company is actually that interested in the content that you're putting down on an interview process, they're probably not the company that you want to go work for.
Yeah, I've seen program directors that I know apply for jobs.
Uh-huh.
And they would submit an action plan for the radio station. They didn't get the job, but you listen to the station, it's like they did the whole plan.
Oh, my God.
They took the plan and hired somebody else cheaper.
No kidding.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. Like, these were startups, and they're like, give us a whole sales strategy.
Really?
You know? Hmm. And it's like, okay, are you just, like, all these interviews could be fake, and they're just gathering information,
yeah.
Right?
So, you got to take your chance, I guess.
Yeah, is there any little flags that we should look at or people should look out, like a certain, I mean.
I think if they kept on probing you and probing you and probing you, right, on the content of your presentation, then I'd certainly be alarmed. I think if they just wanted to sort of like get a sense that you can actually put something on paper, right? What I'm saying is like they just want to see, can this gentleman actually put something down, and can he put together a business plan from a sales strategy is what I think most of our clients are looking for.
Hey, Rick, thanks for calling. Yeah. Great story.
Yeah.
Hey, good luck, brother. And by the way, Anthony's information is going to be on the website.
Yeah.
Anthony Avalon, President Reitman Personnel. If you're looking to find a better job or find better people for your company.
Exactly.
This is where you go. Anthony, thank you, brother.
You got it.
Right now, let's talk to Jeff Finn. Is Jim Morrison still alive? Jeff says yes. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how are you?
Morning. Good. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm awake. It's a little earlier where I am.
Gotcha.
But,
well, thanks for making time. Yeah. Jeff Finn is a filmmaker, director, Before the End, Searching for Jim Morrison, a three-part docu-mystery. So what'd you find out? He's alive?
I like that cutting to the chase, you know, just going right to it. I believe so. Yeah, I believe after, 39 years of independent research and 12 years of work on the aforementioned docu-mystery, I do believe that's the case, beyond any tabloid BS.
Let's just say we're in a court and you're given opening argument and you're doing some bullet points as to some facts that you found that lead you to believe that Jim Morrison is still alive. Run through some of those.
Yeah, that's on point, as it were. I had over the course of those 39 years in general and the 12 years I put into creating the doc itself, I was told by two different private investigators, a former forensic analyst for the FBI, and a former judge, among others, that the evidence, using the air quotes there, the evidence, such as it is, would never hold up in a court of law. The evidence regarding, the alleged
death.
Of July 3, 1971.
Okay.
So essentially you're working, the public took the low-hanging fruit of former
doors manager.
So you're
working the other way. Instead of saying he's alive and here's the proof, you're saying prove that he's dead and you don't see it.
Yeah, I've essentially, I've reverse engineered the whole thing, for lack of a better term, deconstructed the whole thing working backwards as, of course, the only way I could. I was born in February of 67, right when the Doors' first album was out.
So. All right, but you got a handful of people to say, this doesn't look right. Now, give us some other things that lead you to believe, there must have been a death certificate, correct?
Yes, but the doctor has never been found. No one can even agree upon the French pronunciation of his surname. Some say it's Dr. Max Vassile, Dr. Max Vassile, Vassy, et cetera, et cetera.
So you can't find him?
No, there's no record of this guy having practiced medicine in Paris, let alone France. So, what do you do with that? We have a phantom doctor. There was a sealed coffin. The family, friends, were never brought in from the U.S. to identify any body. If you watch the docu-mystery, you'll see and hear that I made connection with Robin Wertle, who was Morrison's personal assistant in his brief 3.5 months in Paris. And she had something to get off her chest, I'll say that. I refer to it as her albatross necklace. And she essentially made no bones about it, no pun intended.
What do you mean? What did she say?
In essence, she was hired under the guise of what we would now refer to as, a PA, personal assistant, or even an administrative assistant. But according to what she imparted to me, she essentially was hired to help him pull off the Rambo, as I call it, referring to Jim's blueprint, his idol, Arthur Rimbaud, the French poet, who also disappeared into Africa and took on a whole new life at the age of 20. By the age of 20, he gave up all his career as a poet and just vanished and started a whole new career as a coffee trader.
Okay, so someone that Jim Morrison idolized as a poet did this same kind of thing, and then you talked to a woman who said she helped him execute the plan.
Essentially, yeah. This is like, it was just surreal. It was beyond surreal. She couldn't literally tell me, so we had to sort of play verbal leapfrog around it very gingerly. And, I looked for her for 20 years, from 1996 to 2016, literally. And the reason I couldn't find her is because her first and last name, both names had been misspelled going back to the publication of Jim's first, official biography, No One Here Gets Out Alive, which was published in 1980. So from 80 onwards, every other Morrison biography, magazine article, newspaper, et cetera, they all parroted the misspelling of her name.
Oh, wow.
So, Yeah. So
did you get her on camera?
Well, she was a slippery one, you know. She agreed to help me, but she didn't want to sit for a formal interview as everyone else did. She, quite frankly, was leery of, as she said, less than stable Doors fans, you know, interrupting her life, which I respected.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to put it tactfully. So, but she's in there.
If Jim Morrison is alive, have you found him? Do you know where he is?
Yes and yes.
Wow.
Now, have you guys seen the doc or no?
I haven't, but I know the answers to these questions. I'm just letting you answer them so there's an exchange of information here.
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
So where is Jim Morrison now?
At the very moment,
yes.
I have my idea of where he is, because he and I, to take a strange situation and make it beyond surreal.
Okay.
I mean, Jim famously sang himself in 1967, "People are strange." I would augment that for postmodern times to say people are batshit, but that's me.
Right, bat, yeah, no, crazy.
No, I get
right.
that. We'll hit the dump button.
But,
on that.
Right. But yeah, to answer your question, he and I have been, we've formed a surreal, genuine friendship for these last 8 years, and we talk often. And we're always in communication, and I know where he is, and let's just say it's been misreported by the lazy convenience of the mainstream media. They reported that I claimed he lives in Syracuse, New York, which
right.
I never said.
That's what I heard.
Said I flew into Syracuse, and I met him in an undisclosed location after that. This is back in May of 2017 already, so we're talking almost 8 years ago. And, yeah, so, you know, he created a philosophy that he referred to as the universal mind. So I have taken that handoff, if you will, and what I've seen organically created from my docu-mystery is what I refer to as the universal mind game. Well, and he was brilliant, and he loved mind games, and let's just say he's in control of the mind game. It began with him, and it will end with him.
So is he part of the docuseries or the docu-mystery?
Yes, he was amazingly Latino. You know, people are like, leave him alone. He's an old man. You're an asshole for, you know.
Yeah.
He's, I'm like, no, no, no.
He's
no,
in
no,
it?
No. He is brilliant and compassionate.
He's on camera?
And hilarious. And yes, he offered. He consciously chose to let me interview him almost 8 years ago on camera. And again, it's like if it's a game of chess, well, he started the game, you know, over 50 years ago, and he's the chess master, and I'm his protege or whatever. I'm just letting him, you know, the game begins and ends with him out of respect for him.
Ruth, you saw episode one, right? Part one?
Yes, I saw the first episode.
Is Jim Morrison in part one?
The gentleman that he's referring to is in part one. Frank X.
Okay, and you don't think it's Jim Morrison?
Well, I still have to watch the other two. I'm definitely intrigued, and I definitely want to continue and see where this goes.
Yeah,
it helps to be fully dialed in and, you know, watch the full series. Obviously, mm-hmm. Otherwise you're going with partial information. Well, let me just say this, and again, I'm not trying to be coy. I'm not trying to be cryptic. I'm also, you know, ultimately respecting his wishes. And I know, you know, a lot of people have a knee-jerk hot take.
But if he sat down to do this thing, he's okay with you talking about it, clearly.
100%.
Right.
And otherwise, I wouldn't. I wouldn't want to out anyone. I mean, that would be ridiculous, you know. So
when you saw this guy, did you think it was Jim Morrison?
There's certainly enough there. He definitely resembles him, speaks like him, mannerisms, knowledge, like it there's definitely
there was something there. There was enough for you, or you didn't look at it and say, "Ah, oh, this is ridiculous."
Right. No,
you guys have to take into account. Okay, we're talking like almost 60 years have transpired. You know,
yeah,
we're talking 50. You know, we're going on 54 years. That if it is him, that he pulled the Houdini, pulled the Rambo. You know, whatever you want.
You
to
just
say.
Said if it is him, so you're not 100% sure.
I'm saying if for your benefit, because you just told me none of you have seen all three episodes, which I can understand. You know, it's a time crunch, but you you sought me out. You wanted to do this interview.
Yes.
Which I appreciate. But, you know, if you're not playing with the full deck, I mean...
I'm not playing with a full deck.
I never had a deck.
And that's before I even heard about you.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, who among us is, right? Yeah, I'm not even a card. I don't even play cards, man, in real life. So that's just a, you know, a lame metaphor on my... You know what I'm saying.
But you're 100% convinced that this is him. He fooled everybody.
Your friends.
He's whatever age it would be, like upper 70s now, right? 80?
No. He's into his 80s.
Yeah.
Right. You know.
Right.
Let me just say this. Again, I'm not trying to be coy. I'm not trying to be cryptic. But I got to work within the parameters, you know, of the respect for him and what he wants.
Yeah.
And what he doesn't want. And, you know, people can say bullshit, say whatever they want. I don't care. It's like I have no problem with people disagreeing with me or disliking my work, as long as they're courteous about it.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as they don't go the childish hater troll route.
Yeah, you know, no, we've all been on social media.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Totally get it.
But I'm more interested
in
facts.
Yeah.
I call it social media sociopaths. It's like, you know, take some time, take a breath, you know, get outside your worldview, and like he would do, because he was brilliant, you know, and be...
Why would you say was?
Let me just say this.
If he's alive.
Have some empathy, because empathy is dying. And a lot of the fans, especially old school Doors fans, have Bill Siddons' controlled narrative so deep in their mouths, like a fish hook, that they can't get it out. And I wish them growth. You know, I do. But they want to hate on me for it as a conduit to him.
No, but we're spending time talking about how you feel about people lashing out and reacting to this than we are spending time about Jim Morrison still alive and fooling everyone.
Again, I encourage you and your listeners to see all three episodes so you have the full information. I spent 12 years on that, you know, so that condensing into 10 minutes, it's kind of tough, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. I appreciate it, though.
Let
me say this.
Is each episode an hour?
Each episode is, just over an hour, with the third one being an hour and a half.
Right.
Why couldn't you do, like, 2 hours? I don't understand. Is it really, do you have 3 hours of content there, or did the company say, we need 3 hours?
There's no company, man. It's an independent project. Okay. I have a distributor.
Nice.
It's distributed through Apple and Amazon and Google and YouTube, but
all right, listen,
no one was holding anything over my head.
I'm going to watch it,
yeah,
and then we're going to get you back on, and we're going to compare notes.
Let me end with this, pun intended.
All right.
And I say this, it's on my official Facebook page, on my Instagram, on my Blue Sky. Jim Morrison, in the context of my docu-mystery, Before the End, Searching for Jim Morrison is dead. Frank X, Mr. X, is alive and well.
Gotcha.
I can't encapsulate it any better than that.
Right. Other persona's gone. Mm.
Okay, well, then you can never be held to saying that Jim Morrison is still alive. Because, you know, if someone says, look, Frank X is this guy, you got it all wrong, DNA, whatever, they prove you wrong, you could say, I said all along,
right? He's
Jim
dead.
Morrison's dead.
He's dead, yeah, right.
Just remember, right, like two things can be true simultaneously. Two things can be true at the same time.
All right. Listen, I appreciate you coming on and dedicating some
of your... I appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh, absolutely. So we're going to watch this, and we're going to get you back on.
We'll be back.
Sounds good, man. Right. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jeff Finn, filmmaker, director, Before the End, Searching for Jim Morrison. I am not watching that thing. 3 hours? Ruth, you watch
I'm
it and tell me what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. First of all, I could tell you right now.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be 3 hours. If you could do The Godfather.
You can't chop it down. Yes, it can't be.
If you could do Goodfellas.
Titanic.
You don't need 3 hours here.
Right. There's got to be some waste in there somewhere.
Right. There's edit.
Right.